And joined now by two great friends who have just made, I'm not exaggerating, one of the most beautiful, honest and moving films I've ever seen. Campaigner Emma Fogarty and actor Colin Farrell. Good morning.
Morning, Brendan.
So, guys, the film is called The Slightest Touch. It has its world premiere tonight at the Dublin International Film Festival. So it's ostensibly about the two of you doing the Dublin Marathon together. Yeah. But it's actually kind of this really profound, moving, funny as well, meditation on life, on friendship, on love, on grief even. And I think also on the judgments we can tend to make on what makes a worthwhile life or not. So, Emma, most people know you as a very powerful advocate down the years. For anyone who doesn't know you, mm-hmm. you live with a condition called EB, yeah. sometimes called butterfly skin. Mm-hmm. Explain what it is and how it affects you.
EB, as you said, is also known as butterfly skin, and it's known as butterfly skin because my skin is as fragile as the wings of a butterfly. So if I was walking down the street and a handbag even hits me in the arm, the skin will tear off my arm immediately, or blister, but it's usually tears off because my skin is so fragile. It's got more fragile over the years. So I am covered in, 80% of my body is covered in bandages, and under those are open wounds that are compared to third degree burns by doctors. Extremely, extremely painful. It's there are no words for how painful it is. As I sit here talking to you now, I am in agony after taking Oxynorm, you know, a half an hour ago, you know. So
you can't remember life without pain, can you?
No.
At all?
No.
Not a moment?
No.
Literally?
No. Maybe up to 10. Maybe up to 10. That was it, yeah.
So you did the marathon to celebrate you hitting your 40th birthday.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have been expected to live to 40.
No.
What did the doctors tell your parents when you were born?
They told my parents she won't live a week and it would be better off if she didn't.
There you have it.
How cruel is that? To tell a 25-year-old mother and a 27-year-old father.
Whatever about the professional opinion of a highly educated doctor to say the chances are she might not live beyond a week, whatever about that,
what's
to then throw in this personal perspective of you'd be better off.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's not the first sentence. The problem is the second sentence.
The second part, yeah.
And you defied that expectation. Mm. You kept defying expectations.
Yeah.
And so you went to school. We see you in the film, footage of you going to your Debs. What were you, 17, 18?
18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were your dreams, that Emma, what were your dreams and expectations of life then?
Honestly, to prove everyone wrong.
Yeah.
I did my leaving cert that year, obviously. And I just wanted to go to college. I didn't really care what I did or what. I knew I wanted to do business because it was such a broad spectrum that I could do so much. So I knew I wanted to do business, but I didn't really care. It was about living independently, going around my own life, doing what I want to do, going to college and learning something and getting a skill at something and then moving on. And that's when I spent 4 years there in college, and then I went on to Dublin and worked in a bank for 3 years.
And then you broke your leg.
EB took over, yeah. And I
took
broke
over,
my leg.
Yeah. And you say that all the time. It's in charge.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
I always said it as a young girl, 20-year-old, I said, I don't care. EB wants to be in charge. You can be in charge. I'm in charge. I'm the boss.
Yeah.
But
you do give it a run for its money.
I do give it a run for its money, but no, EB calls the shots. If EB decided to play games with me this morning and decided to throw in a couple of blisters here, there and everywhere, I wouldn't be here this morning. So it decides what I do on a daily basis.
And, you know, you never moan in the film, but you don't sugarcoat it either.
Yeah.
But you still grieve, don't you, for that life that was taken from you?
Yeah, I've always said EB has robbed me of the life I've always dreamed of, which is, you know, which sounds mad to people that will be listening, is paying a mortgage, worrying about the bills at the end of the month, worrying about my kids, what they're going to have for lunch tomorrow. You know, I'll never have a home of my own. My dad will never walk me down the aisle. You know, I'll never have children of my own, and I would adore that. I will never watch a movie on Saturday night with my husband and kids. You know, that will never happen for me. So I've lost so much, but I have also, because of EB, I've gained so much. I have won a lot in another way, in the wrong way, and in a way I don't want. Yeah. But I have won. You have to look at it like that too, is that I've done so many things that people are like, oh my God, I'd love to do that. And you have to say, you know what, maybe I have done all right for myself.
And the rest, Mrs.
Colin, I know everyone, when they're selling their movie these days, has to pretend to have a very special bond with their co-star. It's the new way we do it now. But you and Emma, you can see, actually have a really special bond, don't you?
Oh, we do all right. We've been doing all right for the last 15 years or so. Yeah, we're good pals, man. It didn't feel like this is not like any film. I don't even think of it as a film or as a film that we made. It was just a collection of conversations we had and thoughts that we shared individual of each other when we were speaking with the director, whether I was working on a film and the director and her very small crew was visiting just to get a couple of days of footage, or whether Rachel, our director, was with Emma and her family and their family home. A lot of it then was Emma and I communicating with each other, and particularly towards the end of the film when I got to come back home and we had the 2 week lead up to the actual marathon. But it just felt like that, Brendan. It just felt like a collection of moments that we were sharing. Yeah. You know, there was no effort, there was no script, there was no, we didn't have the money to finish it when we started making it. It was all very guerrilla style.
Yeah.
You know, so the fact that we're here, yeah, and that it's playing tonight.
Was it?
I can't bitch about it too much because it was my idea. Yeah. So I can't, you know, I can't get all coy now and go, no, I didn't want to do. But I didn't want to do, like, I honest to God,
You didn't want to do the marathon, we'll start with that.
Well,
I didn't want to do the marathon.
I made a very loose-lipped side remark to Emma one day, we should do a marathon together.
Yeah.
And then she called me out on it about
it
a year and a half
together.
Later.
You said, I'd love to do the Dublin Marathon for Deborah Ireland.
Did I say that?
Yeah. And then I reminded him a couple years later.
I can't even remember, but sure, there and there we were, and then she called me out on it.
I said, remember you said.
Yeah.
Because you get a lot out of this friendship. People might imagine that it's a kind of a, you know, movie star being.
No, it's not. There's no sympathy thing. There's no charity nonsense.
There's not.
That's the thing. I'm a little bit freaked, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
Because it is. Because our friendship is something that's so sincere, and it's something that existed for 15 years before this whole thing, right? Yeah. And so the last thing I wanted for people to go, you know, he's a star, she's got EB.
Yeah.
It was never supposed to. Like, it's just, we're just two people that got to know each other over time.
And you can clearly say anything to each other.
She rips the piss out of me constantly, and we have great banter.
And we have
a great laugh, and we lean into each other as well. Yeah. She'd know more about whatever, you know, struggles I'd be having in my life, either in my own head or in my own just experience of living as a father or a worker, an actor. And I'd know a good bit. Like it was a few years before you started really sharing
open,
with me the depths of misery sometimes that EB can place you in. You know what I mean? Understandably, of course.
Yeah.
And it took a few years before we really got into the, you know, the real marrow of where friendship can arrive you with somebody when you're really sharing the things that you don't want anyone to know nearly, but you need somebody to hear just to validate the kind of the depth of sorrow or the depth of joy or whatever the thing is. You do at times, it's good to have a human being be there for you, and she's always been there for me, and I'd like to think I've been there for her as well. So it wasn't supposed to.
No.
We weren't supposed to be here on the radio. You know what I mean? There was no ambition around this. It was just, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
The director was the big one. Rachel.
The director, she is the biggest heart in
biggest
the whole
heart.
World. And she wanted to make this the best thing it could ever be. But did we see ourselves as a Dublin Film Festival? No. Did we see ourselves doing interviews?
Line, or, you know, there was
no structure
to any of it at all. She
we knew the ending was the marathon.
That was it.
It
barely wasn't as well.
Structure isn't really what it's about, though. It's about going in and out of kind of
the messiness of life, Brendan.
Your life is in there as well. You let
but
the cameras
everyone's
in
life is messy, and I think that's what we, you know, we're a lot of people are living beneath this kind of a pandemic of pressure that is trying to rise ourselves to what people present in relation to their lives online. You know, they present these perfect images. I don't give a shite what anyone says. I think every human life, if it's lived fully, I'll throw that in. As a little, you know, it's messy. It's messy.
It is.
It's painful.
Yeah.
We all experience loss. Yeah. We all experience fear. Yeah. We have hope. We have ambition. We have greed. We have anger. We have gentility. We have all. It's messy experience. And so you're dead right. I think that there was no storyline in this. It's just the two of us having a laugh. Chats and having a laugh. And, and then inevitably, Rachel, the director, being who she is and not wanting to manipulate anything. Either, but Rachel is really deeply curious as a woman and as a storyteller. Like really, like when she'd ask you questions, I never once felt that she was trying to guide or direct or was looking for a back entrance into getting an answer. She just had a real care and curiosity for, and does for life, whether it's Emma's life, my life, your life, she'd be the same. She was talking to you.
Yeah.
She'd look at you and you'd know it's a human being that cares how you're doing straight away.
She just wants to know the answer herself.
Yeah, exactly.
Not even for the camera. She just wants to know the answer herself. If we were having dinner together, she'd ask the question without the camera.
Yeah.
So she asked it just with the camera there. It was very easy.
It really works for her because you do get a lot of answers out of it. And Colin, it's interesting that thing about that you present an equivalence between your two lives. It's not like, you know, here's Colin Farrell, he's flying, and here's poor old Emma, right?
Yeah.
So you let her into your home. And we meet James, who has Angelman syndrome. And this is relevant to Emma, too. People can think about someone like James, and I think this is why you meditate on James in it, maybe. They can think, you know, oh, the poor creator.
Yeah, of course.
Sense that, you know, he's a burden. His life doesn't matter as much as other people's lives.
And I get that as well, some people.
I think they mean well a lot of the time.
I know, and I've struggled with people. I've had a couple of people say to me through the years, and always with an Irish accent, so it's even on its way to potentially more forgiveness straight away by virtue of its origin. But I've had two women I can remember in my life and hearing about James going, ah, the poor thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't take... I could feel a little pinch inside as a dad of wanting to go, what do you mean a poor thing? He's happier than any of us.
Yeah.
But I didn't take offence because I knew it came from a place of care.
I think you have to stop policing people at a stage, don't you?
Of course you do.
The
only thing we care about is malice.
What version of it do you get, Emma?
That, exact. Oh, you're just a Samaritan. You think, fair play to you, poor thing. It must have been hard on you.
You're even tilting your head there.
You get the head tilt and how are you? Poor thing, how are you? You know, you do get that. And it is, people think they're asking out of caring and genuine careness, but the poor thing, no, I actually had the best day of my life at the marathon, and yes, I was in agony, and yes, I was in pain afterwards, not because of Colin, and I always say that it was because of EB, but yes, I always get the head tilt, the poor thing, and the how are you?
And Colin, you actually, I get the impression in the film, you get more from James than James gets from you.
Oh God, now if there was a way to measure it, that would be confirmed.
Yeah,
honest to God, it's empirical.
Yeah. He was your higher power, wasn't he?
100%, literally. Like when I went to, you know, I went, when I did the rehab, the first of two tours of duty, in, what was it, 2005 or something, you know, it was a 12-step program, a 12-step AA program. So there was very much about the higher power. And at that stage, I had a bit of a beef with my limited conception of what God may or may not be. So I was like, no, you know, none of that, thanks. And so, but I did realise that I need to look to something outside of myself for both strength and guidance, or even the idea of really, really unfiltered love, you know, and love without condition. And James represented that in my life. And so when I had my little homework folder when I was doing my 4-week rehab thing, and I had pictures of James, Polaroids of James on the cover of the folder, and it was really like, you know, people say you have to do it for yourself, you know, you have to get sober for yourself.
Yeah.
If you go into rehab, you might not care enough about yourself. Do you know what I mean?
You might not be at that stage.
We'll get to that later. So that's why a higher power, whether it's a plant, a child, a God, whatever it may be. So James, and he's needed me in a very practical way, the way children need their parents, of course. But then it came quick to me very fast how clearly and how much I needed him, you know.
Yeah.
He's an amazing, amazing young man. And he truly is, like, honest to God, and this is just his story. I'm not saying, of course, everyone with Angelman syndrome or anything like that, no generalizations, but just James, with all his very clear physical and intellectual limitations and all that jazz, he is
one of the happiest human beings I know. And sure, that's what essentially we're all striving for. And we're doing it in misguided ways. But what's it all about? Yeah. If it's not about just having moments of joy.
Yeah.
Like seriously. And then we're all gone. Yeah. Dust. You know?
I had the great Richard Dawkins on the show once, right? And he was telling me about how he felt that the baby's fetuses with Down syndrome should be aborted. And I said, well, why do you think that? No, I had him at a bit of an advantage. And he,
<I'd> say,
he didn't know I knew a bit more about it than him, right? But he basically, what he said to me, Emma, was though, and it's a bit like going back to what the doctor said to your parents. He said, well, it seems to me that they decrease the amount of happiness in the world and increase the amount of unhappiness. And I said to him, so do you know anyone? I was thinking, dude, come to my house and meet the happiest person there. You know,
100%.
And clearly James the happiest dude in your house as well. Yeah. And Emma, do people sometimes probably assume that you are unhappy as well?
I'm the most miserable person. No, people say you always have a smile on your face, but they probably think at home I'm the most miserable person because a lot of people know I have a bandage change, I am in pain, I have, you know, all these things going on, and yes, they probably assume that I am miserable, but I strive to, when I'm not doing a full bandage change, just get out and see people and just go for coffee, go shopping, go to the doctors if I have to, whatever it may be. And when people see me, they say I put on a smile and I say, how are you? And I could be miserable myself, but I would be smiling, and they probably think I am probably, oh, she's just smiling for me, you know, she's putting on
the
smile.
Poor creator.
Sometimes I am and sometimes I'm not.
You allowed the camera to film you being unbandaged to see those wounds, third degree burns, as you say, the equivalent of, and the pain underneath. Why was that important?
It was you never understand EB. If you've never seen EB, you never understand EB until you see someone with EB. When you saw my bandages, it probably hits you first, you know, oh God, the bandages. But then seeing a bandage change, nobody has ever seen a bandage change, no one. From Deborah Ireland to anyone in town, at home in Abbey Leaks, or family, nobody, only my inner family, have seen it, and my nurses and my PAs and all sorts. So it was a hard call because it's a very vulnerable situation. Yeah. You are literally taking off almost everything, and showing it to a camera, you know, that, you know, well, I hoped a lot of people were going to see. Now we know a lot of people are going to see, but what even you see in the film is hard for people to watch, but what you see actually is the best of a bad loss.
Really?
That isn't the worst.
Wow.
No, that isn't the worst at all. And I go to, there's so much more worse that I go through every day, that like right now there's no skin on the sole of the toes of my foot. So it's and I have to transfer from bed to chair to bathroom, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's hard. So what you see in the film, even is the documentary, is the best of a bad loss. Yeah.
Okay.
But
okay,
I wanted people to see the reality, the real deal.
Yeah. Emma, am I misinterpreting something you said in the film? Or when you dream at night, sometimes do you not have EB?
When I dream at night.
Is that what you were saying, or did I?
When I listen to music, I always say music or distraction is my best painkiller. Like we had dinner last night, and the minute I got into the taxi, distraction stopped and the pain went, I'm back. But when I listen to music, I dream and I float away into another world. But yes, I've probably said the only time I am not in pain is when I'm asleep.
Yeah. Colin, your dad was ill while you were making the film and he died shortly afterwards. And it sounds like possibly part of to do with the headspace that you're in with the whole process of the film. You had this amazing healing with him and with yourself as well, didn't you, before he died?
I did, I suppose. Yeah, it was a long time coming, maybe 48 years, but... but it wasn't a pleasant end, and there are pleasant ends, you know, there are people that drift away gently, and unfortunately it wasn't that way for him. But the fact that myself and me three siblings were around the bed with him, up until the very last. And over the last few years, even there was a kind of a, I don't know, there was a kind of a, an understanding between the two of us, or a familiarity that transcended the awkwardness that we had shared together over various periods in our relationship. But I was left with nothing but love and kind of almost, I say almost, almost a strange admiration for him for just making it to the end of a life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a huge thing that Emma surprised me. I didn't know, but turned up at the wake.
Yeah.
You know, that time it was just extraordinary to see her come into my dad's wife's house. Eileen's house, and Emma came with her family, and to see her there that day, it just hit me so hard to just have her support and her strength and her kindness and consideration.
That was actually the moment you broke down.
Oh yeah, you at the door just absolutely broke me. Yeah.
Why?
But I don't know. I think maybe I just have a lot of the way I also unique, but also shared with the way I would around the few people in my life who are very close friends. But I have an enormous amount of feeling around Emma. Like, I have anger for her EB. I have love for her. I have fondness for her. I have anger for her EB. I have hopes for her future. I have regret for the things that she's lost and that EB's taken from her, etc., etc. So I think, you know, I was already so full of feeling and seeing my dad in the coffin there, you know, in repose, and then just to see this woman who's been my friend for 14 or 15 years. I'm sure somewhere inside me, I mean, I know, as I said in the film, how much struggle it is for Emma to get out of the bed, to get into the chair, to get into the car, to get back into the chair, to get, you know, to get wheeled, all that jazz. So just to see her coming through there, and it's just, you know, just the way people turn up for each other sometimes is a moving thing. That's it.
Yeah.
Just that, I suppose, the simplest answer. I could have just went straight to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'll always say, so that is, Colin's been my friend for 15 years, you know, and I wanted to be there for him, like he's been there for me, as he said. And, you know, I'd show up for my friend Kim, Katrina, Lynn's, you know, if their parents passed away, I would show up. So I thought, well, what's the difference? Is Colin... It's
of
my
course,
friend, you know, so I would just turn up, and that was the thought. I knew if I told him I was coming, he'd be like, no, Emma, no, 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 I don't want to come. No, don't do it yourself.
Had to
don't.
Be hard.
Yeah, you would.
So listen, the marathon then. So Emma, it was, as I said, it was for your 40th, and I kind of, I felt a grand act of defiance, really, wasn't it, to do this for your 40th? But turning 40 is a complicated, hard one for you as well, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I spent a lot of time, months coming up to my 40th, crying because I didn't want to turn 40, because no one with my form of EB and my very specific form of EB, I suppose, has turned 50. And it was a hard one for me, because I was like, I don't want this to be my last decade. I don't want this to be my last big birthday. I don't want this to be whatever. It was a really emotional one. So I wanted to mark it, and I wanted to mark it in style. And I think I had three parties or something like that. And then I had different celebrations with different friends who couldn't be here, there, or wherever it couldn't be. And I knew Colin couldn't be whatever party or whatever.
As you call it, the social butterfly condition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I said to him, I said, I want to do something. I don't want to just go out for dinner and drink. You know, I don't want to just do something, because that would have been too easy for you. And then I thought, you know, and I wanted to do something for Deborah Ireland as well, as I had done when I turned 30 and for other occasions. So I thought, you know, didn't he say a few years ago? And then the message was sent, and the message came back, and the first one was a bit of a, maybe I don't know. And then a couple of days later, I woke up to a voice message as the nurses were walking in. I was like, would it be really rude to put in my earphones out, because I hadn't responded to his, I don't know.
Let him think on.
The Banshee sequel is possibly shooting.
And I was like, oh God, the nurse was just walking, so I couldn't listen to it. And then I listened to it after they left, and he was like, it's 5 a.m. in New York, and I'm here thinking about the marathon, and I think we should do it. And that was it. And I was like, oh my God. But then what I didn't know was there was a second voice message, and he said, and if we're going to do it, he said, I think we should do a documentary. And I went, That's when I started going and eating the mushroom. Yeah.
Good for the goose, good for the gander.
Exactly, yeah. So I didn't see that one coming. I threw him a curveball and he threw it right back at me.
Well, listen, I think everyone's going to be very glad you both did, because it's turned into that curveball. It's turned into such a beautiful thing. You weren't really in form for a marathon by the time it came around, Colin, were you?
It was by the laws of the Olympics. I was walking.
Okay.
Both feet were not off the planet at the same time at any single stage over the last 2K.
Now, the last 4K, to explain to people, you did the first 38K on your own. Or like 5K. I'll be there for the 5K when you hit your 50th, right?
Yeah.
So you do the first 38. The first time you smile, it's down the road here at the end of Nutley Lane, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And the first time you actually genuinely look happy about the whole thing is when you see Emma, wasn't it?
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a year and a half, you know?
Yeah.
And there was a good bit of organisation gone into it, wasn't there? We had to make sure, we had to get the Dublin Olympic team, the marathon team, I'm shooting above my weight there, the marathon team on side, and Jim Honesty from the Dublin Marathon was extraordinary, amazing. And his whole team. Amazing. And then we had to have a meeting, 20 people meeting the day before, make sure the guards were running with us, just in case anyone pushed me to get a selfie while I was with her or something. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't about going to protect the famous person. It was about, particularly when I'm with Emma, somebody nudges me and I nudge her and she's out of the chair, it's curtains.
And road surface and everything.
All of it. So I ran it. No, I lie. I drove it with a very badly suspensioned car the week before, and I saw that it had just been paved. It was sweet. Yeah. So I was comfortable about that. But there were still, when we got onto Marion, there were some potholes, which was a bit of a concern. So we were dodging those. But when I saw her, man, at the side of Nutley Lane, and we've been talking about it so long, and we were both so excited about it. It was huge.
So
I took off too fast.
Right.
And
I was doing 9 minute, 30 minute miles for the whole thing, and 9 minute, 30 seconds. And then I got her and I noticed my legs were going faster. And I looked down at my watch, said 7 minutes and 10 seconds a mile. And I thought, shite. And by that stage, I had done myself in. So I hit the wall about 2K before the end. I kind of blacked out. I can't really remember.
I did not know that.
One of the lads.
You were actually. You were driving the bus at that stage, Emma. Clearly,
I was like, here to say, and
Tom took one of the guards. He took the thing off me for a second. The chair, because he looked at me and he said, "You're going over."
Yeah. So you were literally.
I was a bit gone. Yeah, a bit gone. Yeah.
Okay.
And you played it off. You were like, I'm just taking the gel things.
Taking the gel, yeah. Oh, yeah, I did.
Chad taking his gel.
I was like, okay.
No, it did, and it took a toll on you though, Emma.
It is, it is. And again, I'm going to say it, not down to Colin. It wasn't. It's all down to EB and everything.
A driver who's checked out.
Yeah, exactly. And the driver was, not seeing things. But anyway, it was fine. No, and we had a great team. And my sister was there, Catherine, and her fiancé, Chin. And they were my kind of people I knew. Kind of, I said, Catherine, just go over there and just do whatever.
She was great,
she was great. So everyone was kind of like, if they spotted a pothole in front of Colin, they kind of would say, go that way and go this way. So
you did pay a high price for it.
Yes. Yeah. So I came back to the hotel and there was a small after party afterwards, obviously, and I went into it and walked back out of it, literally went in and went back out, and I went to another room for a few minutes with my friend Kim and my then PA Georgina, and we went into the room, tried to figure it out, and no, we couldn't. We went, and everyone was like, you have to go to bed. You have to lie down. So I went up, lay down for about a half an hour, then they came to do the bandages. And I knew I'd take a toll, but oh my God, did I. We only did thighs, bum, sorry for your audience, but my bum and my back were done at that point, and everything had been bleeding. Everything had been bleeding there. And then on the Monday, we do a full bandage change. And I was like, the whole time to the nurses, why is my knee killing me? My right knee was killing me. And I had no reason to. Now, I can't wear runners because my foot, they call it the ballerina stance, my foot doesn't go down to the floor. Okay. So I can't wear runners or anything like that. So there has to be something with a heel. So I have a pair of Timberland boots that has a heel on them. And I thought, okay, they're the closest thing to a runner. And I wore jeans with that. I said, I can't wear a dress in the marathon, in the Dublin Marathon. You can't wear a nice little dress, can you? Yeah. So I wore jeans. And I thought that was a great idea. They were bootleg. And next day, when we were doing the full change on the Monday, I was like, my knee is killing me. I was like, did you bang it? No, I didn't bang it. Did you hit yourself something? No, I didn't hit yourself something. Did you fall? No, I didn't fall. I remember that. And took it off. And from side to side, top of the knee to the bottom of the knee, there was no skin. And the only thing we can put it down to is the jeans. The jeans were rubbing too tight against my knee and it ripped all the skin off.
The slightest touch.
Back to touch.
Yeah. Now, you raised over €1 million euro for Deborah Ireland.
Yes,
how will that money help people with EB?
So it's going into various things. It's going into research, which is so important. I mean, there's so many treatments coming out now that it's great all around the world, in Ireland and around the world. So it's great we have an input in that. What is needed now is nursing care for at home. There is still, I am the only one, I think, or second one in Ireland with public health nurses and agency nurses coming into my home and PAs coming into my home and doing my changes. My mother was doing them till I was 28 years old. There's parents still doing them for their children now, which is just beyond wrong, because a child, 7 or 8 year old child, sees their parents coming with needles, scissors, bandages and everything, and they go, pain, you're the villain, I don't like you, because that was me, I was that person, and I know that. So I hate that for the parents. The parents should be there to hold her hand, to see, do they want to drink, to see...
Like Pat in the film.
Like my mum, we were doing a full change. Colin was there for it. I insisted Colin see a bit of a bandage change. And mum came in and she said, are you okay? Do you want anything? Do you want a cup of tea? Do you want anything? Are you okay? And I was like, oh, well, I'm okay, thanks, mum. And that's what a parent should be doing. They should not be the one inflicting the pain for the right reason. But to the child, they don't see the right reason. They see, you're hurting me, you're causing me pain.
Gotcha.
And that's wrong.
Yeah.
That's wrong. So that's what we're doing. And we're actually fighting with the government at the moment for, what is it? What was it again?
695,000
to provide nursing care to all our patients. And we're still fighting the fight.
Okay.
Since the marathon.
You could still be fighting that when you're 50. But
Yeah, I could be.
Colin, during the making of The Slightest Touch, you were in Macau for some of it, making The Ballad of a Small Pair, which, by the way, one of the films of last year. Absolutely superb work, considering what you were going through at the time you were making your films. But it's superb.
Thanks,
I think season two of Sugar is coming out this summer, isn't it? And
Sugar's
made in LA. You say
Sugar's
movie,
made in LA, which is great.
It's more important.
I don't want to leave Los Angeles now.
Really,
because the lads are there, you know. And James is entering a very interesting and exciting stage chapter in his journey. And then Henry, I might have home for another 3 years. So I really just don't want to leave. You know, I'm tipping 50 now. And in your 20s, going on location all the time is exciting. But I just want to be kind of home with the fellas now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You make such great choices in your work. Interesting. I'm thinking about After Yang a few years ago.
Oh,
yeah. An extraordinary little film.
Gentle.
But now this... The Slightest Touch, it actually, as I was saying to you, on paper, like, this isn't a nice little film, but actually, like, probably one of the most stunning pieces of art you've been involved in.
That's
in
lovely,
way,
man.
I know
one thing, state the obvious, forgive me, it's by a mile the most important film I've ever been a part of.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And I think
and
a lot of it
down
to Emma and her staggering truth and beauty.
And that's the whole genesis of it. Yeah. Like, the whole genesis of it is Emma, by virtue of her elegance, her dignity, her perseverance, her will, her spirit, her humour, all of the things that had me as her friend fall in love with her over the years, and then gave a gone by being like me the idea to let's do a documentary about them. But it's all about It really is all about Emma.
You and must I, be I knew very I had to glad put myself she came in into mix. Your life.
Oh, yeah. My God, yeah. She's yeah. enriched my life no end.
Yeah.
Oh,
and, my and God. Emma likewise,
so
I'm sure.
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah, yeah. So yeah. lucky.
By the way, Emma, you have a book. It's called Being Emma, isn't
yes,
it? And,
yeah,
and people
yeah.
can get your story there as well.
Yes, yeah.
But look, The Slightest Touch has its world premiere in Dublin's Lighthouse Cinema tonight as part of the Dublin International Film Festival. That is obviously sold out. When will everyone else get to see it?
I think towards the end of the year. It's going to be on HBO Max.
Oh, yeah, they're screwing us for another streaming platform. In Europe, I think, yeah.
Exactly.
But listen, so they're investing in quality stuff to get us on board.
Yeah.
So, okay,
yeah.
Yeah,
they got
okay.
the song.
Look, Emma Fogarty and Colin Farrell, congratulations on a beautiful film. Have a ball tonight.
Thank you.
I know you guys have to go. Can I just tee up a piece of music? And Colin, remember the Special Olympics, the World Games came to Ireland.
I'll never forget it.
Yeah, and I will never forget it either. Because it came up for me watching the film again. So it was 2003, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I remember looking at you going, oh, there's Farrell. Like, isn't he great? What's he doing there?
What's
and
his
then
diagnosis?
I realised, yeah, yeah. And then I realised that you were just there. You'd no dog in that race.
No dog in that race
James
at that point.
James is born.
A few months later,
yeah,
yeah.
And my wife is now a major player in New Park Nemo's Special Olympics Committee, and I have an athlete in the Special Olympics in New Park Nemo. So there you go. Did the two of us know anything about life that
no,
night?
Man.
Right?
But that's what they're going to teach us.
But
it
was an
I mean?
Extraordinary moment,
yeah.
wasn't it? And
yeah.
do you remember you two played one?
Yes.
And do you remember that the song took on in a stadium
Absolutely.
Full of athletes
Absolutely.
And all those
And I don't think anyone that was there
people.
Will ever forget it as
no,
long as they live,
no.
honest to God.
And the song took on a whole lot of
Every taxi driver
and had
in the city was talking about
scenes.
It for a year at
yeah,
least afterwards,
yeah,
every time
yeah.
he got in the back of a cab.
Yeah, yeah, extraordinary.
Special.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Brendan,
so we,
thanks
we just, while people digest all of that,
thanks,
here's
Brendan.
One.
One, lovely.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame. You say, won't love, won't lie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.